Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Thank you for joining us today on your lunch hour. As always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. And a reminder, if you like our show, tell your friends. We're a growing show on a growing network. And if you like what you hear, share the love. So we talk about it a lot, but in Wisconsin, we have a fair amount of water issues. We have lead pipes in Milwaukee. We have PFAS across the state, you know, CAFOs contaminating drinking water with animal manure. Last week, we had a clogged canal from melted butter.
Yeah, there was that.
Less of a systemic issue, but you get the point. So, but now, apparently, we also have a road salt problem because it's washing into Wisconsin's major waterways. And it's kind of a problem. It's a big problem, not just for us as humans. It's a problem for the species that live in those waters. So here to talk about more about the problem itself, the consequences, and what we can do about it is Allison Madison, who is Wisconsin Saltwise Program Manager. And she has spearheaded statewide collaboration around salt reduction since 2020. Welcome to the show, Matt. Allison.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me on. It's a pleasure.
So I found this article. It makes sense, but I found this article first in Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and it was in reference to a report that a committee of the Wisconsin DNR worked on as far as water quality issues. And basically, in summary, it's that Wisconsin is on an unsustainable path of road salt usage. Obviously, you've been working on this for a couple years now, but for me, this was kind of news. It makes sense, because there is a lot of salt everywhere, and it makes sense that as snow melts, it gets into sewers and into drainage and everything. But what is the extent of the problem?
Yeah, thanks for the question. So really kind of like a step back for people, you know, I mean, I'm in my 30s, right? So growing up, I saw salt, you know, went down. I grew up in northern Wisconsin. I feel like in general, the farther you make your way north, there is an understanding that winters are hard. Yep. And you're going to have to slow down and there's going to be snow on roads and you have to, you know, be extra safe. And yes, I did take my dad's car into the ditch once as a high schooler. But I think what we've seen is that since the 1950s and 60s, when we started to put salt down, there's just been this mentality that, you know, if some salt is good, which it is, right? Salt does help us get back to better pavement conditions, right? Keeps everybody safer on the roads. And we see the benefit of that. But there's been this mindset that if some salt is good, well, then more salt is better. And let's just put it down. And like a lot of our environmental issues, you know, it seems like salt just disappears, right? You put it down, the snow melts, and the salt is gone, right? But we know nothing ever really goes away. So as we've continued to put salt down and more salt down year after year, those salt concentrations are just building up in our soils and in our groundwater and also in our lakes and streams. So across Wisconsin, we're seeing that salinization of our fresh water. It's getting to the point in some municipal wells that people who are supposed to be on low sodium diets might be impacted by the salt that's in that water. Salt becomes a stressor, right, to our systems, our biological systems, and it also stresses out the organisms that are evolved to live in freshwater. So we're thinking about, you know, fish and frogs and tiny little, you know, critters we can't even see, zooplankton, that are the base of those food chains. So as our waters get increasingly salty, it stresses out their systems. It leads to declines in biodiversity and the growth and reproduction of those freshwater species.
So it's not like, because what I read is there's also a difference in the bigger problem being in the streams, in the smaller, mm-hmm. because it, like, at least in like Michigan, there's still runoff. Mm-hmm. But at least because there's so much water, it can dilute more. And so is there a bigger concern over what part of the state, what part of how close you are to water, or is this something the entire state has to be aware of?
I mean, I would say we're all, you know, like water creatures, right? Like our bodies are made of water. We need fresh water. So it really should be of concern to everybody across the state. And it is localized such that, you know, that when that salt goes down, it kind of stays in the local watersheds. And in areas where we see more salt, you know, more salt has been applied, for example, in Milwaukee, right? You just have, it's more urbanized, there's more pavement, more salt going down. And we've seen those concentrations go up from naturally, like pretty much 0 milligrams per liter of sodium and chloride because it's fresh water, not salt water. And now we're up into the thousands of milligrams per liter. Yeah, you're shaking your head. It's not a good situation there. And those, again, those are the smaller streams, like you said, that don't have the ability to dilute the salt that's coming into them. Lake Michigan, I mean, giant lake, right? It holds about 1/10 of the world's fresh water. So we've seen concentrations there go from, you know, like 0 to 1 milligrams per liter in the 1800s. And now it's up to, I want to say roughly 15 milligrams per liter. So still a sevenfold increase, but not, you know, as alarming as we see in our smaller lakes and streams. Also of concern is, the fact that we see salt, well, we're saying, you know, Lake Michigan's maybe only up to 15 milligrams per liter. We see higher concentrations of salt at the bottoms of lakes because salt water is more dense than fresh water, right? So you maybe take a sample in a lake at the surface, and it's not really telling you the full story of what's going on. So there are some lakes in Minnesota, upstate New York, where the lake bottoms have gotten so salty that it prevents natural lake turnover. And so then you're not having that turnover, seasonal turnover that recycles oxygen and nutrients throughout the lake. So it really can change the lake at that ecosystem level too, when things really get out of whack.
Allison, when you're talking about salt in our drinking water, so many of us have filtration systems now. You know, it goes through our fridge first and goes through the filter in the fridge. Are those designed to filter out this kind of thing?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jane. So really, we don't have great systems to pull salt out of water. Like natural, conventional filtration systems that you might have in your fridge or like a Brita filter, they cannot pull out the salt because the sodium and the chloride ions, once you put it in water, they break apart, they dissociate. And then they're just so tiny. And we also see that problem at our wastewater treatment plants. So across southern, kind of southeastern Wisconsin, where we naturally have pretty hard drinking water, lots of calcium and magnesium, right, in that water, people use water softeners, so salt-based water softeners to pull that hardness out of the water, work to protect their water heater and their dishwasher, right? All of that salt, those 40-pound bags, right, that we see maybe at Quick Trip, and then we haul down into our basement and put it in that water softener, all of that salt goes to our wastewater treatment plants, and then they can't pull it out.
Oh, wow.
So they're actually discharging all of that salt into our local streams. So we see that as another source of salt that's leading to this salinization issue. So I'm actually in a program with Building Wisconsin and the local plumbers union. They're collaborating with the Madison Wastewater Treatment Plant to do a lot of education around now the water softener salt kind of source and how people can make sure their water softeners are optimized to use as little salt as possible to be really efficient and not just, you know, regenerating some of those older systems. They really can be salt hogs. So it's working to educate people around, you know, what you can do at your own home around road salt use, and then also water softeners, and then also just trying to have people understand this issue, kind of the bigger perspective, because there are a lot of municipalities in the state that have worked to really right-size their salt use when we're talking about road salt. So we're seeing municipalities drop salt use by up to 50%, 50%. Yeah. And it's not that they're reducing their level of service, but they're incorporating best practices like calibrating trucks so they know exactly, you know, how much they're putting down and they can make precise applications of salt. based on the amount of like the temperature and the weather trends. They can use liquid, like liquid brine can help salt stick to the road. So it's not bouncing off into the ditch, it stays where we want it to be. And when that liquid is mixed in, it actually, it's like activated and it helps that melting. It just jumpstarts that melting process. Have you guys ever seen those lines on the road before the storm? Sometimes there'll be trucks that are just putting down liquid brine, so salt brine. It's still salt, but before the storm, it kind of works like putting oil on your skillet. You know, if you don't oil your skillet and you put food on there, what are you doing afterwards? You're scraping, right? But if you can prevent that bond from forming between the snow and the pavement, when the plow comes, it comes up much more easily, and you're using a lot less salt in total.
Is there something that individual homeowners and residents, those, so not like the big trucks that are from the city, but like as a, yeah. I am a homeowner. So like, is there something I could be using besides salt that would be better for the environment?
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest thing that we work to promote is you get out there if you can, you know, early and often, right? And shovel or use that snow blower and work to remove the snow. And then sometimes, you know, the sun can do the rest and you don't need a de-icer kind of material. There are a few other options. So if you don't want to use salt, like using some sand just to provide traction in an area. There are some non-chloride de-icers, but there is definitely a higher price point there. And there's also no truth in labeling. So it's hard to know what you're really getting. A lot of things say, you know, environmentally friendly or pet friendly, but they can kind of stick that label on anything.
So with a couple minutes that we have left, if people are interested in learning more about Wisconsin Saltwise or more about what they can do to help, where could they go?
So I would direct people to our website, wisaltwise.com. We've got a ton of resources for people. We also have Wisconsin Salt Awareness Week coming up January 23rd through the 27th. And we're going to have webinars every day over the noon hour. Those will be archived on our YouTube. So you can have a chance to hear from research scientists, from the DNR, from practitioners about a lot of the successes we're seeing across the state. So yeah, I would encourage people to join and learn more and see how they can be a part of this important work.
Absolutely. Well, Allison Madison, who is the Wisconsin Saltwise Program Manager, thank you so much for joining us and teaching us more about what we can do to help not further salt our water, because
keep the fresh water fresh.
Keep the salt on your French fries. All right. Thank you so much, yeah. Allison. We will take another break and some other water issues because we're wading through Wisconsin water today. All right. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Inflatable pool full of dad's hot air. I was 3 years old, splashing everywhere, and so began my love affair with water.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Thank you for joining us in the noon hour. We were just talking to Allison Madison about how salty our fresh water is getting, which is not a good thing.
No, it's not.
And we have some control over that as residents and how much salt we put down, despite not wanting to, you know, trying to not have anyone fall on our property, but also knowing that there's other ways besides just adding more salt. Also municipalities knowing how much they should be putting down and looking at different
application methods.
Yeah. But that is not our only water problem, because it's PFAS is so bad. And there was another story over the weekend, maybe late last week. No, this morning.
Yep, in the Journal Sentinel.
This morning in the Journal Sentinel.
Yep.
In the town of Stella, which is up in Oneida County. And the levels of forever chemicals, aka PFAS, are so high. This is up in the Northwoods. They're hundreds of times higher than state standards. And the state and state officials are worried that filtration systems won't actually get the chemicals out of the water.
That's certainly not good.
And as a reminder that these things, when we say forever chemicals, it means that they don't leave, and they if they're ingested, they don't leave your body. So it impacts health of adults, of children, property values, the futures of towns. French Island. Forgot how long ago this was.
This is near La Crosse, right?
On the Mississippi River. Mm-hmm. They couldn't drink the water. They had to drink bottled water. And one of the gentlemen who's interviewed in the piece, Tim Gerdman, he has a Culligan water dispenser, one of the ones that we have, something like that in the office right now. So you get delivered drinking water. But what do you feed? He has 30 chickens. And what does he feed them? What does he do to water his garden? And if all of the things that get the drinking water, besides you just avoid drinking it, it's like, are you just poisoning yourself and you just have to live with it?
The other thing that really jumped out at me from this article, again, from the Journal Sentinel today, the state does random tests.
Mm-hmm.
They go into a neighborhood and say, A, B, C, D, we're going to eeny, meeny, miny, you. And that's how they discovered this issue in Stella. It was just one residential well that they do on this rotating testing schedule. Think about how many communities in Wisconsin may not have had any testing of this done yet.
I know.
And so they still don't, even know what the water quality is.
When I think about the... whenever it comes to climate stuff, there's this difference between the things that feel like you're in control to a certain extent. So like salting your streets feels like, all right, now that I have awareness of this, I can curb some of my habits. Mm-hmm. Like Allison said, get out there early, get out there often. Usually the sun can potentially melt more of it than you putting down an entire bag of salt. But when it comes to PFAS, article after article, report after report across our state, I can't help but feel like it makes you just feel helpless, because this is on the companies that are polluting the water. And this comes from, what PFAS comes from is mostly like fire retardant materials. So mm-hmm. like it was foam. It's anything that's waterproof. So it's Teflon. It's Teflon on your pans. It's waterproof fabric. It's things that create a water barrier. It's useful, right? It makes a ton of useful products, but the standards of which the companies that are responsible for then those chemicals getting in the water. And this is what happens at the policy level and the legislative level of like, how much are they allowed to just keep doing it? And when we talk about, this is up in the Northwoods. And so, in the next segment, when Senator Melissa Agard joins us, and one of the things that she's focused on is how do we get more Democrats in Republican areas? And
to talk to people.
Just north of Brunswick with Jeff Smith. There's no Democrats in northern Wisconsin. And so at what point does the only thing you can control when it comes to your water being poisoned, you can't stop it. You can drink Culligan water, but you still, the hose, the faucet, everything. And so what does this ever become a voting issue for people? For people who vote Republican typically, but continuously the people who are blocking more legislation, more accountability.
Possibly appointees to boards that would regulate things like this?
And it's, because it harms business, right? This is regulations on businesses, which the Republicans that hold the majority in the Wisconsin State Legislature, the WMC, like they don't want more regulations because it harms business. And so at what point is the only thing you can do when it comes to this issue is vote differently? And does that resonate enough with people, or is it just something that they're like, well, is what it is. Cost of doing business.
I just don't understand, from a business standpoint, how poisoning your customers is a successful business strategy. And I also wonder, Culligan and all these other places that we buy our bottled water from, where are they going to go, ultimately, if everything is full of salt and PFAS? And where are we going to get clean water from?
Well, especially as Allison was saying, the ability to actually get it out of the water. Like that was for salt, but even if the levels are so high in the town of Stella that you can't even get it out through a filtration system, then what do we do? I don't know. Well, maybe Senator Melissa Agard will know. Stick with us because she's going to be here when we come back. We're going to talk about all things on her agenda, despite being in the minority. I'm very excited for this conversation. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.